Hello, this is Tara, and you're listening to Tea Time with Tara. My guest on this episode is a former enlisted member of the U.S. Navy. So she is a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces and an enormous advocate for mental health in the U.S. Armed Forces. I hope you enjoy this extremely important episode.
Hi, welcome. Will you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me, Tara. My name is Rachel. I am the host of the podcast, Your Story Doesn't End Here. I am a military mental health advocate. I spent 6.5 years in the U.S. Navy myself, and through my own experiences, just decided to take that and make the military better for those who are still serving. So freshly out as of 2021, but still very much fighting for those who are still active duty and for veterans to have better mental health care.
That's very admirable. I really appreciate that. My grandpa and uncle both were military guys. Those are two guys in my family that I really, really love and care about. It's important.
Yeah.
It's something that's not talked about enough.
It's not. And you know what? What's wild to me is that, like, there's articles and stuff that'll come out here and there that'll say, like, oh, this happened on an aircraft carrier. Three people took their lives, whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, this did happen. This was a legit article that came out. There's three suicides in 1 week on an aircraft carrier.
Holy shit.
Yeah. My last command that I was in the Navy just had their third suicide in the last 3 years. Ugh. And so, like, this is very normal in the military. It's not reported every single time it happens. I think if it was, society would be more outraged. But what's interesting to me is there's most people that I talk to, they have some kind of connection with the military, right? Like, mm-hmm. You have family members that were in the military. A lot of people have a friend or know someone that was in the military. And a lot of people out there will say, you know, thank you for your service. Thank you for your sacrifice. But I think there's this like idea that the service and the sacrifice is just affiliated with like going to war, because that's what people associate the military with. It's still right. Very much like a Vietnam World War II era mentality where yeah. It's like, oh, you're going off to war. You're dealing with this when you're in war. But when you come home, you're getting this A1 special treatment. And that's not what it is at all. I mean, I can only, of course, speak to my branch. Mm-hmm. Other branches go through different things. And what I've found is, like, even on my podcast, the combat vets have, like, a completely different, like, night and day experience than what I had. I never saw combat. It wasn't my role. The Navy's very much, like, a support-type right. branch in general. But what's crazy is most people that join the military have some kind of mental health issue when they separate from the military or while they're in. Not everyone realizes it. And, you know, I've talked to people that have gone through some shit and they're like, yeah. Oh yeah, I'm perfectly fine, because I don't think a lot of people realize it, but the support and everything isn't there. Some people can't handle it and it gets to the point where they do take their lives. And so, you know, when we have something that's preventable in right. some way where we could be saying like, hey, like, let's provide support to people, and it's not there, then to me, that's a problem, especially for absolutely. An organization that like hails itself as the top of the line in leadership and healthcare and everything. You know, there's a disconnect here. So it's like, you know, from the outside looking in, like, I'd be curious to know, like, for you, someone that's not military, like, what your view of the military, like, healthcare system is when it comes to mental health, or like what you would think not knowing any information about the military and how it is.
Well, my stepdad is also former military. And so I do know that he goes through the VA for like everything, but I don't know anything about his mental health treatment.
Yeah. So what would you think? I mean, I guess like family members aside, and like if someone was to say like, what do you think, like what kind of treatment do you think that service members are getting for health care?
I know that they're not getting good health care. That much I do know. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, because of my personal connection to them, and just hearing like horror stories of like coworkers whose parents were trying to get care through the VA and things like that. So it's pretty fucking awful that these people are expected to be basically, I mean, actually putting their lives on the line, putting their lives on hold sacrificing, it's not just like what you were saying about the sacrifice, like, thank you for your service, thank you for your sacrifice. I don't think people realize the gravity of that.
Right.
Like how much sacrifice there actually is. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, you got to think like a lot of these people, most of them are not only moving out of their hometown. So that's already like could be a traumatic experience for someone, right? But separating from friends and family, separating from everything we know, going to boot camp, which is like, it's supposed to be a culture shock, right? Like you get your cell phone taken away. You have very, very little contact with the outside world. It's not like what it used to be or like what I thought boot camp would be.
Okay.
I would say that like it was a lot easier than I expected. I mean, that literally like halfway through, my sister division was getting like candy from the next, like Sour Patch Kids and shit. Like, yeah. So it's not like it was like super hardcore, right?
Yeah.
But there's still a section. I mean, there's still a dynamic of like a culture shock because no cell phone, very minimal contact with the outside world. So there's like three traumatic things all at once. And then on top of that, like people across the US are not all the same. And not everyone realizes that. Like there's some people from like the deep South that I couldn't even understand a word of what they were saying.
Oh, I because met somebody like that.
Yeah. And it's like, what? Like, I didn't know for such a long time that there were people in the U.S. who I would not be able to understand that were born in the U.S., right? I was like, you know, I can understand, like, someone from a different country that has an accent that maybe I'm having a hard time deciphering. You know, my dad's Nigerian, so people all the time have a hard time understanding him because he still has an accent. But it's like, there are people in the U.S. that I legitimately could not understand because of their accent. And I was like, what? And then,
like,
you know,
Power from King of the Hill.
Yeah. Like yeah. It's like, what? Like, I just didn't know. Right. Yeah. And then you have these, I mean, everyone's raised differently. Right. So you have some people that were raised in areas where like certain racist slurs and, you know, treating women a certain way was their everyday norm. Mm. And it didn't occur to them that like treating people a certain way and respectfully is like the way you're supposed to treat people. And so you get like the Midwest, the East Coast, the West Coast, the South, you're combining all these people together. And then on top of that, some of the people that join the military are not US citizens. So sometimes you get people that barely speak English on top of that. Yeah. Because you can get your citizenship somehow through the military. I don't know the logistics of that, but there's just so many different things hitting you all at once.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to believe that like everyone that joins the military can come through all that completely mentally okay right after that culture shock of like leaving home and everything in boot camp. And then all of a sudden, like, bam, you're thrown into an A school environment, which is supposed to like phase you slowly into like the normal, I guess. I don't know. They have like a phase one where like you can only wear your military uniform and you like can't leave the base. And then this was my experience at least. And then phase two where like you can leave for like so many hours, but you still have to wear your uniform if you're out in town. And then the phase three was like the full liberty where like you can be out all night. You can come back as you please. You're allowed to have more freedom and it's supposed to like phase you into it. But it's like, it's still just like a lot all at once. And then you go from there to the fleet, which is like a whole other culture shock, which is, you know, for me and my experience was like a cesspool of creepy men who were like creeping on the Facebooks of people before they showed up calling dibs. Yeah. I mean, it's just like culture shock after culture shock after culture shock. And it's like, I find it so hard to believe that everyone that's going through this is really, really okay. I think a lot of people find their coping mechanisms, and you see a lot of alcoholism from the military. A lot of people are smoking. There are some people that do drugs. They're just very, very like, they like are very like obscure about it.
Okay.
And then hope for the best. There's random drug tests in the military. Okay. Like every single day there is a random drug test. The thing I will say about it is that like the people that watch you pee are just other enlisted people or like other officers. So it's not like it's like a secure, super secure drug testing program. Like
right.
I could have watched a friend of mine pee and like how many different things could get fucked up in that, right? Like I could have just been like, oh, you smoked this weekend? Like I got you. I'll pee for, you know, like I didn't do that. I never ran into that situation, but like, let's be real.
Right. It's possible.
Exactly.
And very easy.
Exactly. Okay. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shit that gets thrown at people and not a lot of support there to get people through that shit is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it sounds like there's absolutely no mental health support whatsoever throughout that whole process. And like, like what you said about it being culture shock after culture shock. I mean, there has to be some level of, I mean, it's, I would feel like I have like mental fucking whiplash.
Right. And you don't even realize it sometimes until like years after the process. Like, you know, there's things now in my life that I'm processing from my childhood. You know, I just turned 30 years old. Like there's things where I'm connecting the dots and I'm like, oh shit, I'm this way because this happened. But 10 years ago, I didn't know that, you know.
Preach.
Right, exactly. Like even like military mental health aside, like I think as people, we're constantly learning about ourselves and we're constantly evolving. And it's like, well, shit, had I known 10 years ago that this was connected to this, then maybe this would have been a little different. I mean, it kind of segueing into like sexual assaults, right? Like, because that's very rampant in the military as well.
Yeah.
A lot of women and men too, I'm sure, that are sexually assaulted don't realize that they were sexually assaulted until years later because there's just not education out there surrounding it. And there's a stigma surrounding it. People aren't talking about these things. And then it's like, by the time someone realizes what happened to them, it's like, oh, well, too late now. Sorry, can't help you. Like,
it's wait, seriously? It's too late? Is that a thing?
So, okay. So when it comes to sexual assaults in the military, I don't want to say that they tell you that it's too late necessarily, but even people that take the steps to report right after it happens, a lot of times do not get the justice that they deserve. It's so much of a he said, she said. Yeah. And the military put in place this program called the Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Program. And within that program, if a individual is sexually assaulted, they can either report unrestricted or they can report restricted. Unrestricted means that we're going full extent of the law. We're going to get NCIS involved. We're going to do this full investigation. The person who's the victim can move commands to a different place, but they keep the perpetrator in the command that they're at. It's just very, like, it's very re-traumatizing for a lot of people. That's why some people don't do it. It's why I never reported unrestricted, because now you're opening up this can of worms where, like, the command's not supposed to know, but the military is like a giant high school, so people know. And people talk, and then it's like, oh, shit, like, so-and-so, like, snitched on so-and-so, and then it starts to create this whole, like, slew of problems. And, like, I wish that it wasn't like this, but this is what I've seen and what I've heard from other people. And so then there's this other option of restricted reporting where you can still report and it doesn't go full extent of law. No one gets prosecuted. You just get access to like therapy, or you can do like the sexual assault forensic exam if you wanted to.
Wow.
And so then they keep that stuff on file. And then if you want to switch from restricted to unrestricted later on, you can, but you can't go from unrestricted to restricted. So the caveat to this program is that, from what I understand, when a case goes to court-martial in the military, because there's two different types of, like, military justice, there is non-judicial punishments, which is, like, military justice that just goes through, like, the command. So the commanding officer is the one that resides over it and makes the decision. Or there's a court-martial route, which is more like your traditional court system in the civilian side. From what I understand, even in the court-martial system, it's still military people that are considered the peers, that are like the jury and him helping make the decisions and stuff. And so it's still, to me, very, very biased. And I think a lot of women that have been sexually assaulted in the military don't get the justice they deserve because of the bias in the system. So like when Vanessa Guillen, I don't know if you remember that or if you ever heard about that, when she when she lost her life a few years back and it came up that she was sexually assaulted, it started this whole movement of women, you know, the Me Too movement, right? Like women coming forward and saying, hey, I was sexually assaulted. And I think there was good intentions behind that movement and like women coming forward and saying like, hey, more of us have been sexually assaulted than you realize.
Right.
But also in that, you know, us Facebook pages were created and people were really coming out and sharing their stories. I was part of a Facebook group that was specifically geared towards like women in the military that had been sexually assaulted. And several women had came forward, told their full story, and they're like, I've never spoken about this a day in my life.
Oh my God. Tell me
why there were other women in that group that went and reported it to the command.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And so these women took their stories down and they're like, I'm never speaking up again.
That's awful.
Yeah. Fucked up, right?
Yeah. Like, what a betrayal. What a, like, what's the point of that?
Right. But that's what, this is what people do. And it's so much like a dog-eat-dog world that, you know, some people are out there with really good intentions and other people are out there just like, nope, I'm just trying to rank up and, you know, I'm doing the best that I think I'm doing because I want to advance my career instead of thinking about other people. And so, I mean, there's so many, like, layers when we're talking about, like, mental health and how to tackle things and where do we start, right? Like, there's so many different areas to that. One of the areas that I am working on specifically, you know, I started a petition a few years back to try to like actually change the military itself. I gave like a 3-page Word document to the highest enlisted member of the Navy, the McPon, and I gave him a 3-page Word document outlining like things that could help make mental health better now, things we could implement 5 years down the road, long term. And I was like, here you go. Here's some stories from people. This is what's happening. My petition is still out there, has like 1,300 signatures. I got a response from him. I think he just responded just to respond, to be honest with you, because like nothing else really happened other than that response, just telling me like, hey, we have something happening in San Diego, blah, blah, blah. I'd like to meet you if I'm ever in your area, whatever have you.
Oh, not like.
Yeah. Yeah, it just like it wasn't like, hey, you know, we're gonna look at these suggestions and actually try to implement things. Thank you for sharing. Like, and let's be real, I'm sure this dude was well aware of like what is happening in the military.
Yeah.
If you Google some stories like in the recent years, like there was a guy, I think he was the chief naval officer. He went to one of the aircraft carriers when like COVID was like a huge thing and like people were like struggling on one of these aircraft carriers, and this CNO guy I guess went and like straight up was like talking shit about the leader on that boat. I wish I could remember the name of it, but anyway, like it's just such a perfect example of like when someone tries to speak up getting shot down or like not feeling heard, not getting validated. And so anyway, you know, the angle that I'm working on now is just giving people the tools to take control of their own mental health and to learn to be better leaders, because I think leadership is very toxic in the military.
Yeah.
You get people, you give them a rank, you give them power when some of them have never had power before. And a lot of people can't handle that. Yeah. I mean, we see it civilian side too, right?
Like, yeah, it's not exactly.
Yeah, it's not just a military thing. The difference is that in the civilian side, if a CEO is being a jackass or a manager is being a jackass, it might be a little easier to get rid of them than in the military. In the military, you sign a contract, you're in. It's too much of a pain for them to kick someone out sometimes, so they just kind of shuffle them around. But yeah, it's like, you know, what else do you do at this point other than like trying to help the people that are in?
Yeah.
Because it's just kind of a shit show.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's a lot. So other than talking to other veterans on your podcast, what other things you said you wrote that letter, which was kind of like treated as whatever. So you decided to take things into your own hands and start to just help people do their own shit on their own without relying on the VA.
Yeah, so that's what I'm working on now. I haven't officially launched it yet. I'm working on launching that this year, but working on a community that's just more like a support type community, right? Like meeting together weekly or, you know, however often, and just like having that community just to have a group of people to just talk.
Okay.
Because what I found is that the military is like a very dysfunctional family, but at the same time, when you show up to work every day, you have people to talk to bullshit with, to vent to, people that understand. And a lot of people get out, or even people are still in and feel lonely and don't have people to talk to or to vent to or to just hang out with that they feel like are their people. Yeah. And so providing that space, but then also with that community, giving these people the tools to be better leaders, to take control of their own mental health, to bring back what they've learned to the people that are around them so that they can, you know, really be the change in the military. And, you know, the goal being that if enough of these people are given the right tools to be better leaders and to take control of their own mental health, then that will make more of an impact than if I myself was to just like stay in the military and try to, you know, be the change and be that one leader, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on now. And, you know, always still at the forefront of like trying to change the actual military itself. It's just, it's challenging. It's like taking on the US government, right?
Yeah. I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. That's enormous.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I know there's several other programs out there. There's several other people that I've met in my journey that are also like doing their own little things here and there to like try to make things better. But, I think at the end of the day, a lot of it comes down to money, just like any big corporation, right? Like the US military is a large business. It is a large corporation. To bring in therapists that are licensed mental health counselors and to pay them, and then to make sure that every single service member has good access to these people, it costs money. Yeah. We can't even do this like in society as a whole, right? Like there's not even enough therapists to handle the US population. And then on top of that, finding a therapist that's a good fit, that's like a whole other dynamic. About like shitty therapist experiences, like I've had plenty of them, and it's like, man, like what if out of all these therapists are provided, like they're not even a good fit. Like at that point, now you have to talk about like, do we bring in different types of therapists, like a somatic therapist, someone that practices NLP, someone that, you know, does the full immersion therapy. I mean, there's so many different things that I don't think that the US military wants to deal with that, because they like to think that everyone that joins the military is mentally okay.
Even though they know that that's definitely not true.
Right. Like, I think everyone that joins the military, like, has their own shit and their own baggage that they're bringing in, right? Like,
you everybody don't just, does, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Even if you're not joining the military, like, we all have our own shit. And that's a stigma piece, right? Like thinking that therapy is only for people that are like super fucked up in the head.
Yeah.
And I think that if everyone had access to a therapist to just like give us like the baseline of what we need.
Yeah.
I think society in general would be a better place.
But. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know that for me, culturally, it's kind of one of those things where you just don't talk about stuff. And I know that there are a lot of cultures like that.
Right.
And I also think that in general, men and boys are socialized to just not really have feelings. That's not a good thing. Like, you don't talk about your feelings, all that. So it's a male dominated environment with dudes who have all this pent up shit.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to talk about it, because if you talk about it, then you're probably looked at like there's something wrong with you, right?
Or exactly.
less than, you're not a man, you're not this, you're not that.
Yep.
Yeah, that is a lot. And it is actually really a fucking shame that it's not something that's talked about more by like mainstream media.
Yeah.
Because it's such a huge issue. Like, we rely on you guys as civilians. We rely on the military for so many things.
Yeah.
And so how the hell is the ball getting dropped that badly?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. I interviewed someone on my podcast pretty early on who was talking about how she had, I think it was bipolar depression. Don't quote me on this. But she straight up said in that episode, like, she was in a position where she was tasked with being like the final signer on aircraft to fly, right? Like, so the aircraft that I worked on, 24 people flew on it. It was a reconnaissance aircraft. And in my job in avionics, I chose not to have a position called a collateral duty inspector. And as a collateral duty inspector, I would be one of the last people to look over any components that were fixed by the worker and just do like a quality assurance inspection, make sure that it's okay. And so she straight up said on my episode, like, I was not okay to be out there. and they knew that I was not okay to be out there, but they needed me because they didn't have anyone else. And so she was like, I literally was in a position where I was signing off on aircraft to fly and I was not okay. And oh, I've heard these stories over and over and over. And it's interesting. I just watched on, was it Netflix? I think the documentary about the Boeing 737 Max, what the two aircraft that like had the problem where they nosedived and crashed a few years back.
Okay.
So anyway, a lot of Boeing employees are former military. And the guy that was talking in that documentary, he was like a whistleblower that was talking about how Boeing was like things were just moving so fast and that there was a lot of complacency and stuff was getting swept under the rug. And it brought me back to my time in the military because, yeah. Like, I'll tell you, when I first got to my very first command, that was an intermediate level command. So that what that means is that we worked on the components, like the big components were pulled off of the aircraft and they were brought to us and we tore them apart, fixed them, worked on them. When I first showed up to that command, you're supposed to use what's called a pub. So it's a publication. It's a book that tells you how to work on every single like piece of that component. Okay. And you're supposed to follow it to the T every time in order to prevent errors and mistakes. When I was trained on that component, they didn't even like open the pub. They're like, oh, this is how we do it. There was a corrosion inspection that we did. So they'd come in, they'd be like, oh, this is the corrosion inspection. This is what we do. I'm like an E2, so I don't know better. I don't rarely know what a pub is. I'm just following what the guy tells me to do, right?
Right.
And so I'm like 6 months to 7 months in, and I'm noticing they're like, well, every time QA comes in, make sure you have the pub open. And I'm like, I don't even know how to use this pub, much less to know what page to open to. And if they ask me questions, I've never used this to work on this piece of gear, so I don't even know what I'm looking for to answer their questions. And so, you know, everyone's working very complacently for this period of time. I don't know how long before I got to that command that they were doing this. There was one guy that had been there like 4 years. And I finally like opened the pub and I was reading these instructions and I was like, hey, this doesn't even match up. Like, what is this? This isn't even on this. And the pub was so fucking outdated that it was like 3 or 4 series back from what we currently had. So right before I left, I started working on updating it so that everything was correct. But what that tells me is that for years, I don't know how many years, people hadn't even been following the simple instructions on how to make sure something was being operated on correctly. And so you have this whole, I mean, there's some shady shit that goes on. And
that's awful.
I don't know if I should be saying this on public platform, but... But I'm going to because
you're not naming names.
This is how you create change, right? Like it sucks for the people that are in because it's like it adds another layer of things. But these are people's lives that are at risk, and so you know when we're thinking about like complacency on that forefront, but then we're also adding in a layer of people who are not mentally okay to be out there. I mean, there's so much of a rush in the military because everything's always on a time schedule. So like at my last command, it was always like our pre-flight was 2 hours long. And sometimes in that pre-flight, you had to fix a bunch of things before the plane took off. Were people following everything to the book every single time? Probably not. Were people skipping steps on things? Probably. I will say that at that like operational command with the aircraft, people were a lot more to the book than they were in the intermediate level command, probably because like we physically see the planes flying and know that if something isn't by the book, like people are going to die. But like when someone's sitting in a shop with no windows and they're just working on one little piece of an aircraft and like it's so easy for people to get complacent. And then, you know, you add on depression on top of that or, you know, bipolar disorder or something for, you know, maybe someone who's undiagnosed because we have social workers that are handling mental health and not people who are licensed or have the capacity to diagnose a PTSD diagnosis or something more severe. Yeah. What they like to do is they like to diagnose a lot of people with what's called, adjustment disorder. So I got diagnosed with an adjustment disorder and they didn't add on with generalized anxiety until I went limited duty. And I finally was like, I was talking to a therapist. I was like, listen, like, I know I got more than just an adjustment disorder. I didn't actually get PTSD tacked on until I got out and I talked to the lady at the VA who said PTSD and got that little bit of validation of like, oh, cool. Like I'm not crazy, you know, but it's a really scary thing if you think about it. But if you look back at like every single mishap that has happened in the Navy, there is probably some kind of mental health disorder associated with that, that people aren't talking about. There was a dude one time that straight up like hid in like an engine compartment in a boat for like a week. They couldn't find him. They thought he went overboard. There was a whole story about it. And I think that that was related back to like mental health issues. And red flags all over the place, but no one's talking about it.
All right. So we talked about how you, everyone in the military, like that adjustment, the adjustment disorder, right?
Yep.
But that trauma of just going in.
Yeah.
What about, I mean, other than combat, what kind of, there's sexual assault.
Yep.
What other kind of stuff is causing people, do you think, to die by suicide? I mean, that's like enormous.
Leadership, I think, is a huge one. And it's sad to say because it sounds like it's so preventable, right? Like, oh, a bad leader, just like fix the leadership.
Yeah.
It's the military. They should be the top leaders of the world, right? When I was in Japan for my second detachment that I ever went on, I had horrible, horrible leadership. So I'll kind of give you some background here to relate to my own story, because I can't really speak for anyone else's story. I know people have had toxic leaders, but I can tell you my story. And so when I was in Japan, I was already kind of like, I was a little like disgruntled because I was supposed to go to Greece. Suda Bay Greece is like the top of the line detachment for like where my squadron went, because you get the most per diem, you get paid a dollar amount per day on top of your pay, depending on where they send you. And so Bahrain, which is where I normally went, was like $3.50 a day. But Greece, you're making like, I think like $30 a day or something. Like it was just like, yeah, it was like a ridiculous amount. And it's gorgeous because it's Greece, right? Like just like a vacation from what I heard. I never went. But I was supposed to go. I was supposed to go out there. 2 weeks before I was supposed to go, they go, oh, just kidding, you're going to Japan. And my command was upset because I didn't get this collateral duty inspector qualification that they really wanted me to get. I was just like, I'm not getting it because you guys use and abuse the people that have this qualification. You make them work longer days. You throw more bullshit at them. I'm not trying to do all that. Like I didn't have to. Like it wasn't a requirement. It was a like voluntary position, right? And so anyway, they ended up sending me out to Japan, and this was like a 2 week before heads up that they gave me. And they're like, we're sending you because you're the most experienced worker, meaning like, oh, you could get, it's called CDI. They're like, you could get your CDI, but you don't want to. So since you're such an experienced worker, we're going to send you out with this guy. And the guy, I won't say his name, but he was an E6. He got his CDI, like it was in routing. It wasn't even approved. It was in routing to be approved as we were flying out to Japan. So when we worked together in our shop, like half the time he was never out on the plane. He was always in the shop, just like chilling on the computer, chilling on his phone, bullshitting with whoever, hanging out in QA. Like, I don't know what he was doing, but he sure as hell wasn't learning his job, and he sure as hell should have not been a CDI. But he was
What's a CDI?
CDI is that person I said earlier that was the last person to sign off on stuff.
Got it. Okay.
Yep. Yep. So collateral duty inspector is like the long version of it, but CDI is the shortened. So, So I was out there as a worker, and it was always with every detachment we went on, it was one worker, one CDI. So it was a very small knit group of people, and in maintenance specifically, you know, you have your avionics people, you have your mechs, you have your airframes people. You have your PRs, who are the people who deal with like the life support stuff on the plane. And then you have like your LPO, it's a leading petty officer, usually one of like the maintenance guys, but he's supposed to be like the top, like the head of the enlisted people, because there's like this chain of command hierarchy in the Navy. So you've got your workers, you've got the LPO, who's like the leader. And then on top of that, you've got like I don't even remember all their names. There's like a chief or someone who's like above that guy. And then there's a guy that's called the OIC, or the officer in charge, and he's the extension of the commanding officer, because the commanding officer for the whole squadron can't be at every single little detachment site. And this particular squadron had a global presence. So there's always groups of people at all these different detachment sites, just rotating out constantly. Okay. And so I'm in Japan with this guy, and, you know, I was trying to, you know, give the benefit of the doubt, because I'm like, you know what? Like, it sucks I didn't get sent to Greece, but I'm just gonna, Japan's not the worst place. You still get paid a decent amount of money per day. It just wasn't as much as Greece. And, you know, I'd been to, an area of Japan, Misawa, previously for like a month, but I never explored Okinawa, Japan, which is a beautiful place. But when I was very early on in the Navy, when I was in my A school, I had what's called an alcohol related incident, and I got in trouble. And had I got a second alcohol related incident in the Navy, I would have been kicked out. That's like their two and done policy, right? So I was very, very like weird about who I hung out with in the military after my ARI. And I wasn't trying to get kicked out because I didn't know the people that I was with. And a lot of people in the military drink a lot. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to ever be stuck in a position where it was like, wrong place, wrong time. Oh, it's your second ARI. You're out of the military. So I didn't get to explore Okinawa as much as I wanted to, because every time anyone ever went out, they just wanted to drink. I wasn't trying to be around that. So I was very much a loner as it was. And so I think that's the first thing that really contributed to my mental health issues when I was in Japan. But the second thing I'll say is that, you know, I was trying very, very hard to be like a team player and help out this guy who didn't really know what he was doing. And I had been on a detachment before. He hadn't really. I mean, he'd been to one, but it wasn't like the same. He went to a place that was more like they just kind of do what we did back at home base, but in a different capacity. It wasn't like flying missions like we did when we were out on debt. Debt's short for detachment. And so anyway, he was just very like abrasive, and he didn't want my help like that. And like, he was very like power dynamic kind of guy. And, you know, one thing that I noticed when we were back at home after talking to other women we worked with is that he just like, he treated women very differently than he treated other people. He would talk shit about his ex all the time in the shop in front of like lower rank, like E1s that had just joined the military. He would like go out of his way to like, when he was our LPO of our shop, back at home, he would like come in the morning, be like looking at the stock market and sports and stuff. Meanwhile, like all the lower enlisted and the women are going around and they're getting ready for the morning meeting. He was just very like made it a point to act like he was better than the people around
Sounds like
him.
A complete arrogant prick.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but then he got upset if like I was like busting my ass and trying to like get some shit done and he wasn't part of it or didn't look like he was part of it. You know, like
be,
I remember one
be a
time.
Part of it.
Right. So like in the morning when we would go out for pre-flight, me and the in-flight technician, we would go out to the plane and we'd start getting ready. And we'd have to walk out there out on the flight line. Sometimes we would drive, we had these vans, and he would just be like chilling inside the hangar, just like bullshitting with people, and he wouldn't come out to the plane. And then he would come out when he felt like it, and like it just like it was not a cohesive working relationship. Right. And so it got to a point one time where like he was just being very like he was talking at me, and you know when people make those voices like you know, like he's talking to me like that. And I like snapped on him and I was like, you will not talk to me like that. That's disrespectful. And I'm not a confrontational person by any means at all, but I just kind of, I lost it. Like I was just so sick of like working with this guy that was so incredibly difficult to work with and trying my hardest. And, you know, I told him, well, first of all, to back it up a little bit, I snapped on him in the maintenance office in front of like the OIC, which is very frowned upon because, you know, that's the highest ranking guy in the group. Yeah. And so like this other, our LPO takes us outside. He's like, let's take this conversation outside because this, you know, well, I'll be the mediator here. And so, you know, I'm standing here with this guy in front of me and I'm like, hey, these are all the things that upset me. You know, like this is what I find wrong with our working relationship. And, you know, he told me what he was upset about. And I was like, you know, you're right. Like I shouldn't have been talking shit to other people in our group about you. I'm sorry about that. I was extremely upset about the way that you were treating me and the way that we're doing things. But you know what? I will try to be more aware of what I'm doing and I'll try not to do that. You know what his response was to me when I told him all the things that that I saw wrong with him? Mm-hmm. He goes, I just don't see it. That's all he said.
Oh my God.
So then this other guy, the LPO who's standing there, he's like, well, I mean, he's like, I do see you do this and this. And he goes, yeah, I just don't see it. No apology. No, hey, you know what? I don't see it, but let me try to be more aware so I don't do this. Nothing. Nothing. So from that point forward, I just, if it was pre-flight, I did my part. I sat in the back of the plane. If anyone was like, hey, I have a question, could you come check this out? I said, go talk to him. I said, he wants all the power. He wants to do all the shit. Go talk to him. I'm not good doing a damn thing unless he tells me to. But, you know, I will say that, like, one thing that I recognize about myself is, like, when I'm in a state of depression or I'm feeling a lot lower, that's when I start to sleep in a lot more. I start to, like, give a fuck less about what I'm doing. And what I noticed about myself in Japan is that I was starting to fall into this pattern. And so I was starting to, you know, like, miss, because where we lived was down the street from the hangar. And okay. So we'd have to wake up a certain time, meet each other, drive to the hangar. And I was starting to wake up late. I was starting to, you know, not hear my alarm. I was just, my body was starting to, like, shut down. And I brought it up several times to people that, you know, hey, like, I'm not okay. I'm not, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't saying it the right way. I don't know. But mental health very much is joked about a lot in the military. And I think it's a coping mechanism for a lot of people. Yeah. I think that people joke about suicide and mental health because they're uncomfortable with it and they don't know how to talk about it. Yeah. And so, you know, I would bring it up. No one would do anything. And, it got to a point where I remember, like, one time there, so on the nose of the plane, we were working on a component on the nose of the plane and we chained the plane down to make sure that it didn't, like, blow away or anything at nighttime. Mm-hmm. So we would put chocks in the wheels. We would chain it down. And then depending on how windy it was, we put so many chains on. So, and I don't know if this is triggering for anyone, but I'm just going to give a disclaimer, but I had the chains literally wrapped around my neck and I was, like, leaning forward and I was just kind of, like, testing the waters. Right. And I wasn't, like, I was in, like, such a low state. Actually, I have a picture on my phone because I took a picture of myself in the state. My face is, like, turning purple, right? There was 10 people that were standing by the nose of the plane. I am literally right, like, nose of the plane's right here. I'm, like, 2-3 feet back from the nose of the plane.
Yeah.
Still in the front of the plane, in front of the wing. So it's not like they didn't see me, right? A guy actually came over to me and, like, he, like, jokingly said something. It was LPO. He, like, jokingly said something. I don't remember what the conversation was. I don't remember what he said. I don't remember what I said back, but he just kind of, like, laughed it off and, like, walked the other way. Mm-hmm. No one asked me, like, hey, are you okay? Do you need help? Like, because, like, that's not normal behavior, right? Like,
right.
People don't just take chains and wrap it around their neck and lean forward. Like, that's not normal. And that's not something I would normally do. Right. But no one, like, addressed it. And I remember thinking in my head, like, I could take my life right now with 10 people standing right there and no one would notice. Like, that is how complacent stuff is. And
oh my God. Yeah, that's a lot. That's, it's kind of jarring, actually. Because it makes sense why so many people just do it then, right? Because it's like, well, nobody's going to fucking care anyway. Nobody's going to stop me.
Yeah, I had a friend one time that told me that he was on a boat and someone wrapped chains around their ankles and jumped off the edge. People have to witness this stuff, right? Like, that's traumatizing. We've heard stories of people that have walked into, you know, the blades of helicopters and planes like that. People are doing this stuff. They're in so much pain that this is what is happening. And what are we doing about it?
Fuck, man. It's that bad? They're just...
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so, you know, with my Japan detachment, I remember, like, towards the very end, it was actually our last day of working. I had missed my alarm and I was supposed to be, like, recovering the aircraft that day because one of the things that we had to do was, on top of our job, we had to learn how to, like, launch and recover aircraft. And so we would rotate through and I was supposed to be recovering the aircraft that day. I slept in through my alarm. You know, I woke up, I'm like, shit, I missed the alarm. And I tried to, like, message the people and tell them, like, hey, guys, are you still outside? I tried calling. It's a foreign country, so it's a lot harder to get a hold of people. couldn't get a hold of anyone. I got dressed really quick. I went outside. The van wasn't there. I went back into my room. Apparently, when I was outside, they had tried calling my like hotel room phone.
Okay.
And I had missed that. And so I was like, well, fuck it. No one's going to answer. I'm just going to walk to work. And so I walked to work. It was like, I don't know, probably 2 miles down the road or so. I still made it in time to catch the plane. But instead of, and this is one of the things that bothers me the most about the military, and I brought it up to my leadership when we got back home from Japan, I got written up that day for showing up late to work. And the guy that wrote me up was the guy that was my CDI. And there were several times that he had been late to work previously, and he had just been argumentative about it, and no one ever wrote him up. Like, it was just, yeah. And then when he wrote me up, instead of sitting me down and being like, hey, like, is everything okay? Is there a reason that you were late? Like, are you comfortable talking to me about this? And like, this is why anytime I ever like addressed any disciplinary issues in the military, I would always ask people like, what's going on in your life? Are you okay? Like, people don't just one day wake up and decide I'm going to be a piece of shit today. Like, something has to change. Is something going on in your personal life? Is something going on at work? Are you okay? And I think, you know, we throw so many disciplinary things at people. And when you ask me specifically, like, what is it that's causing people to take their lives? It is hands down that when people start to show these signs of, hey, I'm not okay, something's different in my life, instead of people caring and stepping up and saying like, hey, I noticed that you cared a lot when you first showed up here and you don't care anymore. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Or I noticed that, like, you know, normally you're on time every single day. You've been late every day this week. What's going on in your life? No one is asking these questions. They're not acting like they care. And so why would someone, when their whole life revolves around the military, and then say their life at home is a mess, what incentive do people have to keep going when they're in so much pain and they feel like they have no support around them? And so the simplest thing we could fix is leadership and how we treat people as human beings. But I think if you ask me, that's probably the number one thing that's taking lives in the military.
Wow. That's awful.
Yeah.
And and like you said, it sounds like such an easy fix, like realistically. I mean, even just training people better. I mean, I can say I'm obviously not in the military, but I struggle with my own mental health sometimes. And it's always like, well, you have deadlines to meet, so nobody fucking really cares.
Yeah.
And instead of being like, what do you need? Like, do you need to take a few days or whatever? It's just like, what's going on? Why isn't this stuff getting done?
Right.
So I can't even imagine like being so immersed in it, because with being in the military, it's like your whole life.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I mean, even in my corporate job, it's like people don't know. Leadership doesn't know. Even like lower level leaders are not trained properly to help the people that report to them. And so it can be as simple as, I'm no fucking expert. Here, you need to go talk to this person. Like, it can be that simple.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it really comes down to just like A, being human, but just getting to know your people, right? Like, if you are spending every day, even in corporate America, right? If you're spending every single day working with someone, why wouldn't you want to get to know that person on a humanistic level? You don't have to be best friends by any means. You don't have to hang out outside the workplace, but like knowing someone enough in a leadership position to notice when something's off or something's different or something's wrong. But then also being comfortable enough to be like, hey, you know, I noticed something's off with you today. Like, do you want to talk about it, or do you want, you know, we don't have to talk about it, but is there someone that I can point you to? Just to care, you know, I don't even think, like, we live in such a social media world these days that people aren't even having conversations anymore. A lot of people aren't talking on the phone like they used to. People aren't talking face to face like they used to. COVID added another dynamic to that, right? But like, people are losing that humanistic approach. And then as we, like, AI is getting more into the world, and like we're turning into such a like introverted society. You know, I will say that like just asking someone, how are you, and genuinely being curious about how they are, and not just
nobody ever gives a shit what they're asking.
Like, someone says, how are you? And someone, like, they expect you to just say good and move on, right? But if someone says, how are you? And you're like, actually, I'm really shitty today. My day was horrible. And you go on about your day. Like, people get annoyed. They're like, oh.
Oh,
like,
yeah. They'll walk the fuck away.
Yeah. They're like, I didn't actually want to know how you were. It was just like, it was a formality, right? But I think that if we added more humanistic approach to the way that we talk to people, I think that alone would make a difference. But like, you know, what we're talking civilian to military, like a lot of military people are very lonely. Now, yeah. You can see them in, you know, pictures at parties and all this stuff. But I truly believe these people that are like drinking all the time and partying are in a lot of pain in their own way. Either stressed out and they're dealing with it in their own way or like something, right? Like my LPO in Japan, this guy would get fucked up like every single night. Like he would drink a whole bottle, run off in the woods. No one knew where he was till the morning. And they're like, oh, he shows up in bed the next day. So I guess we're okay. And I'm like, what?
That's nuts.
Yeah. It's just, there's so many unhealthy coping mechanisms. But yeah, I mean, just being human, it's the simplest fix that like, for some reason, people are so uncomfortable doing.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's one person who actually, instead of like giving me a hard time, I think I like didn't show up to a meeting. And I think I called out that day because I was taking a mental health day. And what that really meant was that I felt like I couldn't even wrap my head around doing anything.
Yep.
And she reached out to me and she was like, when I came back the next day, she was like, hey, are you okay? It seemed like something seems off. And I said, honestly, no, I'm not okay. And she was like, look, I'm not going to push you, but if you want to talk, please, you can talk to me. And like, I don't even report to her. I just work with her. Like, she's in a different department. But she's like a higher level than me. And we just work together on certain projects. And it's like, the fact that she gave so much of a shit to ask and then to continue to talk to me and this was just the other day that she was like, don't worry about this project that we're working on right now. Take care of you. I was like, let's just get something on the calendar. And she's like, nope, you take care of you and you let me know when you're ready. You're the most important thing right now. And like, nobody else at work has done that.
Yeah. And how much of a weight did that take off your chest knowing that like, oh my God, like
one person gave a shit and that made all the fucking difference for me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's wild because I think like when we're late to work or like, I'll just use being late to work as an example because I think it's relatable. Like there's an automatic anxiety, right? Especially missing a meeting, right? Like we throw these high expectations at ourselves and like immediately for me, like my head's like, oh, what am I going to say? What excuse am I going to make up? Do I just be honest and say that I slept in today? Do I like say, hey, I'm really depressed right now. I'm struggling. Like what do I tell these people? And that's like, now there's like all this extra overwhelm on top of being late to work. And then when you get to work now, it's like, oh, I'm behind. And now everyone's looking at me weird. And like, for me, at least my mind is racing, right? When I have someone that just says, it's okay, slow down, do what you can. It's like, oh my gosh, thank you. Like, thank you so much. But you know, at least when I was in the military, like, right, being late to work, like I guess being late to work when I was at home, half the time they didn't realize that I was late because they did just a really shitty job, like making sure people were there, which is a whole other thing. I mean, they're supposed to account for every single person every single day because it's the military, but again, complacency.
That doesn't happen. No big deal.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I just think that like, recognizing these things, being humanistic. And then, yeah, like you said, like just knowing that one person cared enough to be like, hey, it's okay. Take care of you. It makes all the difference in the world. And realistically, could save someone's life. Because let's be real. How many times do people like take a mental health day? Because it's like, if I go to work today, I don't know if I will live beyond today. Like it is that serious for some people. Yeah. And then we got leaders out here throughout the world, military, civilian, that are like, what do you mean you weren't at work at 7 o'clock in the morning and you didn't get 10 reports done? It's like, listen, if my brain's in fight or flight or state of overwhelm, I can't think anyway. You don't want me doing this shit when my brain can't think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I get it. Okay, we're back. Where were we?
Crap. I don't remember.
Well, that's motherhood for you, isn't it?
Right.
Okay.
I think we're talking about the, like, just the when people are humanistic to you when you need a day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I feel like there are so many different things that I can think of that people could do to change, like, even just for your coworkers, like, and I'm sure in the military, if people weren't so focused on climbing the ladder, climbing up in the ranks, like, they would probably be a little bit more kind. Like, a little bit of kindness goes such a long way. It's true.
It's true. And if one person were kind to one person every single day, like, that alone would compound so much more than we know.
Yeah.
But we think about how many people are just, like, walking around just, like, triggered and upset and, you know, angry all the time. And someone's angry because someone treated them a certain way. And, like, that compounds, right? Like, think about if we just took it the opposite way.
It touches everybody that that person interacts with. So if you're kind to somebody, then it really – I mean, when people are really kind to me, I spoke with somebody recently and they just – gushed about how much my podcast had helped them, and that just that little bit of kindness to me was thank you,
right?
I was like ready to cry, and then it changed the rest of my day, you know, for the better. And it doesn't even have to be anything that big, just being nice to people. It's so fucking
easy. So simple. I agree.
Is there anything that you want to leave the listeners with before we end?
Yeah, I mean, just what we said, be kind to people that you meet. Know that how we present ourselves to people, how we treat people, could impact the entire trajectory of someone's life. So I think if there's anything that I could leave people with today, it's just take care of yourself. Always take care of you, because you matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, be kind to the people around you, and it really will change the world if every person could just do those simple things.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. If you're kind to other people, they're going to be kind back. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me, Tara. It was a pleasure.
Apologies for the random interruption at the end and the fussing. My daughter woke up right around the end of when we were recording, and so I held her on my lap for a couple of minutes while we wrapped up. So that's what I meant by mom life, and was like, where were we? I hope that you enjoyed this episode. I hope that you learned something. I think that the biggest takeaway as civilians and how we can support our armed forces is to support Rachel's podcast so that people's stories get out there, as well as signing her petition. I'll be sharing her link tree in the show notes. And just generally, I mean, I'm sure that we could reach out to our own state representatives. This shit's so important. Nobody should be enrolling in the military and then be suffering the way that they are suffering. There's no reason for this to be such a secret. It's not okay. Next time that you say thank you for your service or thank you for your sacrifice, I really hope that you keep all of this in mind. As always, check out my Instagram, teatime.with.tara. On my Instagram, even if you don't have an Instagram, you can probably check it out through your browser. And that's where my link tree is. But for those of you who are too fucking lazy to check that out, my link tree is linktr.ee/teatimewithtara. I have been really struggling with keeping up because I had some microphone issues. I had a couple of guest episodes actually recorded, and I think it's my mixer, because I've been troubleshooting what is going on with my sound, and I think that my mixer's fucked up. So I lost two episodes that I had recorded. Thankfully, I was able to get one rescheduled right away, I have another one that's already on deck, recorded and good to go. And I'm pretty booked up from here on out, right through February, I think. And more people to come because I've got phone calls scheduled every week, several times a week. It's really awesome that so many people are willing to share their stories with the world. I'm really grateful that so many people are trusting me to be the person to do that with. If you haven't already, obviously subscribe, like, rate, all the things that I'm always asking you all to do. And if for whatever reason you feel like you need support, please reach out, do some quick Google searches, talk to someone. And when in doubt, reach out to me and I'll do my best to connect you with whatever resources you might need. Thanks for checking out Tea Time with Tara. Stay tuned and stay weird.